And it goes a little something like this.
Welcome to the program tonight, a very interesting night for sure. At 11 o'clock, we'll be talking to Crown Countdown, you host, on-air personality, discussing with us the Canadian football life that is prior to the CFL, but still a big part of the CFL, college football. And not only college football in Canada, but college football in the U.S., keeping track, they keep track of how Canadians are doing throughout the football world. We hope you'll enjoy the program tonight. In a couple of minutes, I'm going to call Mitch Mortaza of the LFLUS, and that is the Legends Football League in the United States, formerly known as Lingerie Football. They've been rebranded. They take their game very seriously. You can check Mitch Mortaza on YouTube. All their shows are on there where they discuss the status of the league. Right now, the American league is the U.S. league is happening right now. In a few weeks, the Canadian one will begin. And they will also be moving to Australia. And they will be playing in the same stadiums that Australian rules football is played in. So a lot of excitement there. Also, they'll be going to Europe. The Europa League will start. Okay, we're going to take a short break and a little commercial time. When we come back, we'll have Mr. Mortaza on the line. And if you want to call, you can call at 714-242-5250. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Hope you enjoy the program.
CO2.
Chad Owens, favorite player ever.
He's from Hawaii, playing in the Great White North.
He's not just good, he's real good.
He's into MMA,
from the gridiron to the octagon.
He's got game. This is his game.
He's the total package.
He's got the hard one.
He's got a great cup. He's a family man,
team player, dedication to the max.
True blue through and through.
I love watching this guy.
He's a highlight waiting to happen.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards, TSN 1050, every morning. The heck you say. I'll just touch up a little bit on the CFL. Take another break. I got one of my favorite tunes that promotes the Hamilton Tiger Cats is Ticat Black and Yellow. It's a real cool song, really cool song. I think they should change their color to more like the Argos, black and blue. Yikes. They took it on the chin this week. That wasn't a very good thing, let me tell you. It hurt a little bit to see that. And, stuff happens. You can't always end up with what you hope for. And in this case, they did not. So the Hamilton Tiger Cats, well, they had their tail caught in the rocking chair. And you know Kent Austin is going to make sure that his team plays a little better next time. On the other hand, the Toronto Argonauts won play in the game. But not so much in as far as injuries are concerned. Hamilton took it on the chin from Saskatchewan. In turn, Toronto had their way this week. They played really well against Winnipeg. In Winnipeg, Winnipeg's defense was looking really good, and I don't know what happened. Just all of a sudden, you know, things didn't work out for them. So again, I repeat, tonight our guest is Mitchell Mortaza, and Mitch is in Vegas. So, you know, it's kind of nice to call Vegas. And I guess if a football league, a new football league is going to start, what better place than Vegas? So let me introduce you all to Mitchell Mortaza. He has his own show, and it's a good one. I've had a chance to see a couple shows. Mitch, you guys have a lot of fun doing your program, don't you?
To send your message, press 1 at any time. To listen to your message, press 2.
Let's try him again. Let's try him again, folks. Yeah, we'll go. Anyway, so he has a show, a program, and the other guys on the show seem a little young to me, but, you know, that's just my opinion because, you know, I'm old. So, you know, they seem a little young. And when I say young, I mean like barely 20, if they're even 20. But I have to tell you, it doesn't surprise me that the on-air people on that program are a little younger. I mean, how do you, you know, an old guy like me couldn't handle watching that many pretty girls play football. I just couldn't handle it. It would just, you know, I'd have a heart attack, to be honest with you. So, you know, we'll still wait for Mortaza to get on the line. Also, we'll go back to the CFL a little bit and digress a little bit with the Montreal Alouettes, whom, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. 24-0, you end up losing. I don't know how that happens. I really don't know how that happens, but it definitely did happen to them. And they look great offensively, and as you all are aware, for those of you that either watch the game or know about the game, Montreal lost even worse than I think that loss was even worse than the loss that Hamilton suffered. 37-0 just means you stunk. But losing after having a 24-0 lead, that's a different kind of smell. I'm not really sure how to describe it other than to say that the coaching staff can only be bewildered. You know, I guess that's the definition of inconsistency. You know, when a team is doing so well in one quarter and then proceeds in the next three quarters to fall completely, and I mean completely apart. Although I didn't see, I think AC learned a lesson in, from previous games where he didn't show his displeasure, at least not as openly as he did in the first two losses. But he definitely had a tough night. And, you know, great first quarter. But again, it just didn't happen for him and the rest of the team after that. Now, a team that I'm impressed with in the early going that isn't doing as well, but I think we'll do better in the second half. How much better? At this point, I started the season by saying that this might be the year that there is no crossover. In other words, Edmonton doesn't come into the playoffs through the back door and the Eastern Conference. You know, I'm starting to think I could be wrong about that. I mean, I joked on Monday on the Argo show that, heck, if they could put two in the East, they could, the West. I mean, it really doesn't look good for the East right now, Winnipeg, Hamilton, and Montreal. Toronto's acting like they're in trouble, making some incredibly daring moves, moves that, well, Brandon Isaac, matching the move, I believe it matches the move of last year when they handed the ball to Chad Kackert by releasing Corey Boyd. Wow, I mean, you got to admire their bravery. I mean, you know, definitely not stand pat, that's for sure. The Argos do not stand pat. They have as yet have not shown that they're willing to stand pat, that they are more than willing to change the pieces in a belief that they can replace the piece that they've released with a much better piece. So far, they're one for one if we count last year. They did win the Grey Cup, so they must be doing something right. And, you know, we're going to try making the call now in the old-fashioned way that we used to do it, on the air. This way I can hear if he's on. I'll check again in case.
Hello.
Hey, Mitchell, is that you?
Yeah.
I tried getting through, had a couple of problems in the early going, but it's all good.
Sorry about that.
Please don't apologize. It's okay. The telephone is the telephone, right?
Oh, man. I had to step out for a second, but I'm good to go now.
Okay, great. Well, let's begin. This is the Legends Football League, which used to be known as Lingerie Football League. You rebranded it. Start us at the beginning. What started this league? And I am more than aware that it's becoming a very successful franchise, if you will.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely been an exciting ride. What started out, and for those of your listeners that know, the Lingerie Bowl, which was a huge Super Bowl halftime broadcast here in the States for many years. It attracted one of the largest audiences in pay-per-view history, the first ever seven-figure blue-chip advertiser to pay-per-view with Daimler Chrysler Group Dodge. So that had a lot of success, and then we decided, hey, we're attracting this kind of an audience and this type of ad revenue with a one-off TV special, what could we accomplish if we had year-round programming similar to the NFL? So that was the birth of the league back in 2009. We were fortunate we drew a television contract the first year, which is unheard of. It then became the fastest-growing sports league in the U.S. and the highest-rated live sports series in the history of MTV networks. And now it's actually seen in almost 120 countries around the world, and it's projected next year to surpass the number of international television households, more so than the NFL. So we will, in essence, be educating people about American football more so than the NFL, which is it's incredible after only a four-year run.
I'll take that little analogy and expand on it. So the student is now the teacher.
I don't know if it's so much that. I think, you know, the international audiences outside of Canada and Mexico have really tuned off the NFL. They're used to more fast-paced, constant action like soccer. And with us, they get that. It's fast-paced, obviously very intense, not what they expect, hard-hitting. And we give the fans, obviously, incredible access with the mic'd-up players and access with the cameras in the locker rooms, et cetera. That kind of stuff has really resonated with international audiences.
All right, and so now, what? Now the easy thing to do, or to say, or to think, is that these are women that are dressed in a manner that is provocative and very interesting to watch. How do you overcome that perception? Because it sounded to me like you said, anyway, is that one of the things that once they start to watch, people forget about and realize there's more to it than just that?
Exactly. It's not something you're going to change until you put the product out on the field. And now that they're seeing these hits, you know, we've put out these viral videos for the past couple of years that have shown how intense these athletes are, the hitting that happens on the field, comparable to any other major sport at any level, frankly. That is starting to, you know, definitely change perception here in the U.S. In fact, we talked about it just as early as 2 weeks ago with a couple of the teams during our 100th game anniversary. Just how much that perception has changed. Now when you run into somebody at the airport and talk to them about the LFL, 9 times out of 10 they go, I cannot believe how, excuse my French, badass those ladies are. And that's what's happening around the country. It's happening in Canada now, in Australia, Europe. That story is being told. And once that's known, really the fans look past what they're wearing and really focus on the football, which is very entertaining to watch.
Tell us how many teams are in the league and what makes up the league.
So now you've got, you know, 12 franchises in the U.S. That's going to grow eventually to 26 franchises. In Canada, you've got 4 franchises. We want to grow that base to about 8. Australia, you've got another 4 that's debuting this year. That will get up to 6 franchises. And then Europe. Europe's going to be coming on board in 2015, and that will have as many as 12 franchises. Currently, we have almost 1,400 athletes around the world, and obviously thousands more competing for the opportunity. So we really feel this is simply the tip of the iceberg as to what's going to happen over the next 3 to 4 seasons.
Now, this unprecedented growth, how are you dealing with, basically keeping up with the interest?
We're not, to be very frank with you. What a lot of people don't understand when they look from the outside in, they really think this is a UFC, WWE type operation because of the success and visibility. But it's actually a very skeleton crew that makes all this happen, working around the clock, sacrificing weekends, personal lives, et cetera, to put this incredible product on the field. And even with that, we have a number of broadcasters that are signing on. Just to give you a sense, since the Legends rebranding, we've brought on 12 sports-centric broadcasters, the ESPNs of places like India, like 10 Sports, Band Sports in Brazil, RDS in Canada, et cetera. And there are more and more coming on every day that want more and more content, and we simply do not have the means at this point to put out as much content as being requested. Fans want more games as well. I mean, right now you still have only 4 games for any team. You've got 2 home and 2 away. All that's going to happen with time. I think the bar's been set so high for us, and that's a good thing in a way, because we've had so much success early on. People look at us as a sports franchise that's as mature as the UFC or WWE, but, we're only in our 4th year. And what's really scary is that same Business Week article compared our business metrics alongside the WWE and the UFC after their first 4 years, and we far exceeded them in attendance, overall television viewership, households, and growth. So you can imagine where we are versus those two groups and where we're going to be once we get the opportunity to be around as long as the UFC and WWE have.
It's a bit of an enigma, isn't it? I mean, all of a sudden, here's women's sports really need to be promoted, pushed. For example, here in Canada, we have rules that dictate that in our universities that they spend as much money on women's sports as they do men's sports. This sounds like a self-propelled success story. Is that what it is?
That's what makes it compelling. You know, we don't have the opportunity for USA Football to fund us. We don't have all these other groups that would subsidize it because it's female sport. In fact, they've shunned it. And that's what's making it more compelling, that this has not only far exceeded anything they've ever done, and I'm talking about the WNBA, even LPGA, these are organizations that hemorrhage money year after year. If the WNBA wasn't completely subsidized by the NBA, in essence, NBA forcing ESPN and ABC to carry their games, it would have died off a long time ago. There's a reason we are the first ever women's sport in the history of women's sport, whether it's individual or team, to have been awarded a video game deal. That only happens when a property is growing and has a lot of upside potential as far as marketing capacity. So, to your point, we've had this success not because, but despite, the lack of support from the, female community as it results in sports, because they're not ready to, see the truth. And frankly, the truth is that, women's sport are not going to be regarded in the same vein as major men's sports. That's just a fact. Some people have accepted that, some people have not. But in order to introduce them and bring them in and develop that audience, you have to be marketable. And even men's sports nowadays, look at Tom Brady. He's marketed just as much for his sex appeal today than his football. Look at David Beckham of soccer. Look at Rousey of the UFC now. It's happening all around sport. We're just a little more honest with it.
You don't even have to say that, really. In my opinion, look, I'm going to be 2 Franks right now. One Frank, this is Frank 1. Frank 1's going, yeah, well, this is this is all about women, scantily clothed, you know, and it attracts guys and stuff like that. And I'll be frank, too. Frank, too, says, when you watch a football game, the guys aren't wearing jeans and, you know, overalls, you know.
Right.
So, really, it's just that as men, but we don't notice that the guys are dressed in a manner that maybe we don't realize women find attractive, in the same way that men may find what the women are wearing attractive. Although what the women are wearing, at least in the early going, when you had the lingerie thing going on, it was a little more provocative. Have you guys scaled that part down and now you're more or less, bathing suits with a little body armor?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the rebranding in January, the Legends Football League, with that came not just the name change, but also a change in gear. We have a phenomenal partner in Rawlings who's really developing a lot of great protective on-field gear as we speak. What they also did is completely re-engineered the shoulder pad to, in essence, be the same as your traditional shoulder pad now. We're in talks with several helmet makers to make a more custom helmet. And also the padding that goes under it. There's a new generation of padding that we're going to be displaying for the first time. There's a lot happening. The uniforms obviously got a little bit larger. The tassels, the lingerie tassels, those types of things have been completely removed. You know, it really has come to light that the focus now is on the athlete and on the sport. And because of that, as I was saying earlier, we've attracted predominantly sports networks, whereas prior, we were seen on networks like MTV. Now it's being, you know, really gravitated toward from the sports community. And soon we'll be announcing major sports advertisers and so on and so forth. That is the direction this franchise is headed in.
So you've changed. It sounds to me then you've gone from reality TV to sports television. You're making that transition.
I think, yeah, that's a great analogy as to what's happening right now. Although those two worlds are merging in all sports, you know.
Absolutely, they are.
You see Hard Knocks with HBO and the NFL and NFL films, you know. You see it with the NBA. You see it with boxing. You know, entertainment and sport go hand in hand, where it used to be very different. Now your athletes have to have personality. They have to be able to be marketed. Your sport has to be fast-paced and unique so that it not only resonates in the U.S., but all over the world. I mean, we're seeing in places like the Philippines and Indonesia, Germany, France, all over the world, and a lot of markets that, frankly, aren't even carrying the NFL. So we're doing it one step at a time, although it seems like we're taking massive leaps from the outside in. It's very calculated. We know the markets we're going into, and we're going to make mistakes along the way, but that's what a sports property does in its infancy.
How do you feel about taking a caller on?
I'd love to take a caller on.
Okay, here we go. What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Connie and I'm calling from Calgary.
Hi, Connie. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Got a question?
Well, I just wanted to know if your guest there thinks that what he's doing with women's sport, as he calls it, is doing anything for women's sport.
Absolutely, Connie. If it weren't the case, then I don't think the women would be playing in the sport. It's bringing a visibility to football, and not just football, but overall American female sport that's never seen before. You'd be hard-pressed to find any sports property that's brought this much attention to American football or female American football. Look, it's been around for 30-plus years, but, you know, if you ask the any Calgary resident that you have a women's football team, they'd be scratching their head. You know, this is bringing that to the forefront. And so if you're asking, I'm sorry, go ahead, Connie.
I have to respectfully disagree with you there, because people that watch LFL do not equate it with the type of football that I play. And I'm a member of the Calgary Rage football team here in Calgary. And
I figured this was a bit biased, but that's okay. Go ahead, Connie.
Well, I understand that there is a market for what you're doing, but I don't think it's doing women's sport
obviously
any favors.
Okay,
well, listen,
Connie,
I don't argue that the women who play in the LFL are athletes. I don't argue that at all. They are absolutely athletes. But what?
Then why isn't it a sport?
Well, it's not that it isn't a sport. It's just that
And what are we saying here? If they're athletes and this is a sport, are you just arguing with...
It's not doing anything for women's sport as sport.
What is it? What is it?
Fair enough.
It for women's sport as a spectacle.
Can I ask you a question then?
Absolutely.
What works in making women's sport better? Other than money, as I stated earlier, where universities are asked to spend the same amount of money on the women's sports as they are to the men's sports. Other than that, what can be done to enhance the reaction of the public to women's sport?
I think giving women's sport the respect that it gives men's sport, you would never find a league where men were expected or encouraged to go out on the field and play in the same type of equipment or uniforms that you see the women in the LFL. I defy you to name one sport where that's done with the
Let me finish with the
idea that that's intended to increase the profile of the sport, or that it's doing something positive for men's sport. I can see where it's drawing an attention to it. I can see where it's drawing a certain type of audience, but I don't think that the people that watch LFL, women or men, are watching it because it's for the sport, for the football. I don't think they're watching it for the game, because it's not the same as women's football. I play
full contact,
three down Canadian football. And
it's nothing like the
arena ball.
You're referring to it as being a sexual... let's put it right on the table. You're saying that this sport is trying to draw on the sexuality that the women demonstrate by what they wear, and you're saying that basically they're not really playing football; they're just doing that. Do you think that's really fair for you to say that, Connie, or to imply it?
It is drawing on the sexuality, and I dare you to tell me that it's not. I dare you to change the uniform.
Of course it is. I'm going to.
We don't deny it. We don't, Connie. What you're failing to realize? First off, are women's beach volleyball players not athletes? Are they not playing a sport? Are their uniforms not meant to highlight a certain level of their sexuality or marketability? Look, we shouldn't
be. But they're playing volleyball on a beach.
Okay, but
they're not playing a contact sport on turf.
Okay, the point being, these are, you said earlier, these are athletes playing a sport. Now, keep in mind, the sport they're playing is a for-profit business. This is not a charitable foundation. We have to build this sport to get to a point where it's the largest sports franchise in the world. And imagine when that happens for a female sport. You know, no disrespect, but what have you guys done for women's female sport as far as football? Nobody even knows it exists. You know,
how much easier do you think it's going to be for us to make people realize that women's legitimate sport exists?
Well, you've been at
like
this for
LFL.
30 years. If you haven't gotten on television in 30 years, chances are it's never going to happen. The 11-on-11 sport that you're referring to features a lot of overweight women, slower women. It's very slow-paced football. And it doesn't attract an audience because of that. It's not because you're wearing more clothes. It's because the football, quite frankly, is not football. You know, I'm an avid football fan, been since I was 8 years old. And you could not pay me to watch one of those games. LFL is very fast-paced. These are all former collegiate athletes from all walks of life. And they're playing a very fast-paced physical game of football. So, you know, the only people that look down on it, quite frankly, are people that have a biased attitude toward it, like yourself, that are, there's a bit of envy and jealousy involved, let's be frank. So call it what you will, but it is the fastest growing sport.
I'm going to defend the listener for a second. That might be a little strong, though.
Thank you.
You know, it might be a little strong. I think you're half right, and here's the thing, and this is what I'm, as the host here, I have the lovely opportunity of not having a stake in this in any way whatsoever. But what I will tell you is that I happen to agree with both of you. And the thing of it is, this is a free country, and so is the United States, so is Canada. And when I watch tennis, if you want to be sexually provocative, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm going to say this about most men, women wear more and they're more provocative. So to suggest to me that the way they're dressed is going to enhance what they're doing, I think that's I don't agree with that, because I happen to think that if I'm going to watch it, it's going to be because of how they play. Yes, there is a segment that, and I think Mitchell will admit it too, you know, there's a segment that is attracted because these women are dressed the way they're dressed. But not all that are interested, just as in any other sport.
Exactly.
You derive whatever satisfaction you do out of what you're watching, as long as it's not illegal. You know, it's not illegal for a wrestler to wear a pair of tights. And let me tell you this. I don't know how many women are turned on by what they're wearing, but, you know, they're not wearing much. It's, you know, it's the same thing. It's really, Connie, what you've got to offer, what you and your league has to offer, will be appreciated once you find an avenue for people to know or to be a part of. The reason it may not be totally successful is because you guys are on your own. There's nobody helping you out. There's nobody saying at TSN or Sportsnet or ESPN, check out this really good football. You know, these women really believe what they're doing is the real thing. Check them out. You know, nobody's saying that. But that's not Mitchell's problem. That's not the LSL's problem. That's society's problem.
Exactly.
They're just providing entertainment. And unfortunately, yes. And Mitch, you have to admit, the fact that they're attractive women makes headlines, if you will. You know,
absolutely. But I'll add to that if the football wasn't good, you can get far more sexually oriented content anywhere else.
I have a question then about the football. So let's take the whole sexual dress, whatever side of it, out of this. Why would you not put money behind developing those women who are obviously athletes into playing regular 3-down, or I guess in the States, 4-down American style football? Why
because
would you do
once
that?
Again, I want to, as to Frank's point earlier, okay, we live in a commercial society where, you know, as I've said before, and I've been very frank with interviews with ABC, ESPN, and everyone else, and I'll say it here again, you know, I'm one of the very few sports executives in female sports that's very upfront and honest about this, that, you know, the demographic, the audience that advertisers and networks care about, honestly, I don't want to sound cruel here, could care less about your form of football because it's slow, as I said before.
Okay, Mitch, hold on. I understand what you're saying.
You know, and it can't be marketed because the women, you're talking about women that aren't necessarily all healthy. You're talking about women that are 5'1", 215 pounds. That's
Mitch,
not marketable.
No, so then, Mitch, the players, the athletes, the women that you have playing in your league, why would you not have those same women, those same body shapes, those same athletes, not the women that I play with, but these women. I pay money to play football. I'm an amateur athlete, okay? Nobody pays me to do this. I do it because I love it. But why would you not take those women that you're marketing in the way that you market them and have them as a quote-unquote regular football team?
Because we're trying to build – because you have to attract that audience to the sport. And if you start in that manner – absolutely. Look, we and the athletes will tell you themselves, you know, this is something that's universally known through the LFL world. We'll bring them in, you know, with sex appeal. We'll keep them with football. And that's what's happened.
Okay.
That's why this sport has grown the way it has. If it was based simply on sex appeal, this would have died off back in 2009, if not earlier. The reason
so
it's growing is because
it? If it's so successful and growing now, why don't you start changing it and turning it into
because
real
there's
football?
There's still 80% of our future fan base that don't know we exist. So we're still building the sport, whereas you've had 30 years and done nothing with women's
there has
football.
Not been women's football in Canada for 30 years.
I mean in
the
general,
that I
both
play
in the
has
States.
Been here for 3 years. Three.
I meant in general, in the States as well. It's been around for nearly 30 years,
well,
and it's no further along
Americans
than the first year.
Okay,
I can't
guys.
Speak for the American side of it.
Okay, you know, in regards to the 30-year thing, Mitch isn't going to mention that anymore because now he understands that you've only been around for 3 years. That point is understood now, I think, by all of us. The important issue here really is the sporting endeavor itself, and to suggest, Connie, to say that, you know, I'm not 100% sure that the fact that men's hockey became very popular didn't have a part in making women's hockey a possibility. You know, there's a saying that, you know, high tides raise all boats. And just because – I don't think it's an either-or is what I'm trying to tell you. It isn't either lingerie or your type of league. Both can coexist.
No, but what I'm saying is why now that – obviously, Mitch is saying that he's got a fantastic
you. I don't think you're
popular.
I don't think you're
he's
listening.
Got a popular and successful league, but he's.
But you're not listening to me. Gave you the answer.
I am.
They're
he's
not
trying
done.
To consider.
They're not done. No, no, no. Listen, I'm going to interrupt you because you're asking that question
okay,
again.
Go ahead.
The same question. The answer is until they reach a point, and I'm going to put a word in. I'm going to put words in his mouth, and I'm put words in his future. Until the league becomes something that has more than a couple of games at home and a couple on the road, and until it has a market that is wider than it is right now to the extent where it can self-sustain itself, all right, they will eventually, whether Mitchell likes it or not, whether the owners of the league like it or not, once it gets popular enough, the opportunities for all types of women will become legalized. Do you understand what I'm saying? At some point,
I
the
do.
Popularity
and what I want
pop,
to know
the
from...
pop, but he doesn't have to do that. They don't have to do that until you make them take you on, until other women want to be in the league. You know, I'm sitting here in the middle. I have four daughters, okay? Do I want to see them play in that league? I don't know. They're not interested in sports. The closest I got was one that wanted to be a gymnast. But at the end of the day, for something to progress and proceed, to get better, it has to reach a certain point. And then when it reaches that point, everybody else around it's going to want a piece of the action. And not just a piece as far as expanding into cities. Women will want to become more involved. Mitch, you can pick up from there, but that's what I believe.
Mitch, I just have one last question for you, and then I'll leave it alone, okay?
Okay.
What I want to know is, do you have in your mind a point at which your league will be successful enough that you will turn to the female population and say, okay, we started this, now we have the ball rolling, people realize that women are athletes too, and we're going to start a quote-unquote regular football league. Is that something you'll commit to is what I want to know. And when can you see that happening?
If I had a crystal ball, okay, first off, I would not have known this would be the fastest growing sports franchise in the U.S. within 3 years. If you would have told me that in 2009, I would have thought you're crazy. So anything is possible. I think you've seen the progression of the sport, the way it's marketed, the gear that's worn on the field, change. Now, will that continue to change to a much more traditional uniform? Who knows? But as of right now, we're dealing in the here and now and growing the sport globally as it currently stands. The athletes don't have a problem with it. These are all women that come from all walks of life, much like yourself, I'm sure, Connie, people that are lawyers, doctors, cocktail waitresses, military personnel, highly educated women, former collegiate athletes, as I said before. If they don't have a problem with it and they love their involvement with the league, which obviously they do, I don't see how you can or anybody else can you know, lay blame simply because these are athletes that are also marketable. The Anna Kournikovas of tennis, Danica Patrick of racing. You know, these are all women that are great athletes, but also marketable. They shouldn't be penalized for that.
I'm not trying to lay blame or penalize anybody. All I want to know is, what is your ideal growth? Where would you like to see your league? What would you like to see as your ultimate, this is as big as we could make this league? What would you, if you had to envision it right now?
Oh, that is quite a ways off for us. You know, we obviously have some very...
In your mind, what would you imagine it being?
As I've said prior, and I'll say it again, the number one global sports franchise in the world, where it's one entity that's played all around the world by women, recognized on mainstream television, which you already have, brought in mainstream advertisers, drawing, you know, audiences of 15,000 to 30,000 to 40,000 people per games, being an Olympic sport. That is the direction this is headed in.
Okay, so when that happens, because you're very confident that it will, am I right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so when that happens, are you then going to use your strength in the sporting world to build women's, quote-unquote, traditional football?
There's no such thing as traditional. That's just something that has started in that manner. Every sport evolves over time. There's hybrids
okay,
of every
sport. Okay, so let's say... let's say, NFL-style football then, as opposed to arena ball, which is what the LFL plays, if I'm not
honestly, as long as there's an audience that wants arena ball and we're able to offer them, as you put it, arena ball, mind you, we are playing outdoors in Australia, for example, at major stadiums. So there's no such thing as arena ball. It's LFL football.
Okay, but you're playing 7-on-7 players, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So once you have the 7-on-7 league as full as you can possibly get it, are you going to then expand into an 11 versus 11 or, as in Canada, 12 versus 12?
No, we have no plans.
Connie, I beg to differ with you, okay? And here's how I'm going to differ with you. The realization has come to Canadian football, and I'm talking about Football Canada, that having 11 players and 11 players is becoming a difficult thing to do. Even, and I'm talking men's football or young men's football or boys' football, they're deciding that maybe because it's so hard to get 22 guys ready to play each other, they're willing to figure out a game that's played with 7 players on each side. You know, you do what you have to do to make the sport grow. You see, what you're trying to do here and your questions, what your question's always alluding to is, you're asking somebody who's doing something that's working, you're asking them, are you willing to change it for something that isn't working that we're doing? You can't ask him that. You are.
No, listen, please.
You are
please,
asking
just hear me
him
out.
To base.
No, I'm not.
No, I've heard what you
in
said.
Fact,
I've heard what
in
you
fact,
said.
In fact, Connie, to Frank's point, I should be asking you that question. Why aren't you changing? Because obviously you're not succeeding. You know, if you want to be frank.
Our league grew. My division of the league grew from 3 teams to 5 teams this year.
Excellent. And how many fans come out to those games that aren't related to the players?
Well, that's something I couldn't tell you because I don't count the numbers in the stands. However, not very many.
They're usually very easily countable, but.
Okay,
well,
Mitch, you're hit below the belt there, buddy. You're hit below the belt, Mitch.
To both of you gentlemen, if you would just let me finish, not scrap the LFL, but once you get the LFL to the point where it's successful and self-sustaining and so forth, then are you going to, as you said you were, because you said that you're doing this to help women's sport, right? Did I mishear that
a little bit? I don't think Mitch ever said that they were here carrying. What they're doing is raising the profile of women's sport, which
okay,
I think.
Frank,
is,
do we have any callers that are more, a greater showing of Canada than somebody with a biased attitude that obviously is not happy that somebody's succeeding. I got to think there's other people in Canada that don't play women's tackle football.
We'll find out.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. In answer to your question, since you don't feel that Mitchell's answered it, I'll try and answer. And this is what I'm going to say to you. Every league, and he answered it a little bit. Every league is free form. You know, it's liquid. It moves in directions that are unpredictable. You know, all you have to do is look at the Canadian Football League, here in Canada, because I'm going to speak on Canadian terms. You can talk about the National Hockey League. They're shrinking the backs of the nets. They're talking about concussions. All these things have to do with the players. The players will be motivated. You see, you're asking the wrong person the right question. The question you're asking is, totally legitimate. At the end of it all, once this sport finds its legs and is self-propelled, like what I'm trying to say, right now it's in promotional mode. It's in, like he says, skeleton staff, trying to make something work that is not where it needs to be. Once it's where it needs to be, trust me when I say this, the women that play will have the wherewithal and the opportunity to make decisions, just like the Canadian Football League players are going to ask the question, since they signed a contract this year for the first time in a while, that affords the teams about almost $5 million from TSN. The players will want to know what their share is and what is the league going to do for them. And that's what's going to happen.
You missed my question, though. Please stop and listen to my words. I'm not asking, is he going to change the LFL into something else? Because it will change.
Okay,
like
what are you asking? I'll try again.
What I'm asking is, are you going to then develop a league for women who wish to play a different style of football?
No. The answer to that question, I'll tell you, is no. That's not their job. I already answered that question. That's not what they're here for. Listen, it's not the responsibility of the National Hockey League, all right? It's not the responsibility of the National Hockey League to ensure that hockey's that all the hockey leagues in the world are in good shape, you know, to send them money. They do, in a way, do that. And this will happen with the Legends Football League, where there will be, once there's money that can be shared to be fought over, then it will be fought over. But at this point, it's a league that's growing, and that's about it. I really appreciate your call, and, you know, it's not their responsibility. I thought I answered that question. I keep answering the same question.
No, it wasn't about responsibility, though. I would just...
You want
all
them,
I wanted
you
to
want
know
them,
was... No, please, listen. I don't want them to be the burden carrier for women's sport. All I'm asking is, if he's doing this with the intention of women having a sport to play and it being a business so that he can make money from, is he then willing to try a different business model after this one's successful?
He doesn't have to try a business model.
I know
business
he doesn't
model.
Have
okay,
to.
You
I'm
answer. I'm sorry, Mitch.
Willing
go
to.
Ahead, Mitch. Go.
Yeah, Connie, we've got our hands pretty full with building this sport. I seriously doubt that we would venture in another realm. We feel very strongly that this is a sport, as you alluded to at the beginning of this call. You know, our athletes love it. We love it. The fans love it. We're not sure who else we have to appease in this equation. You know,
it
is a great sport.
I'm not asking you to appease anyone. Nor is it your job to try and convince me one way or the other, because
exactly.
Everyone has their own opinion.
Okay. Well, we can say goodbye on the note that we can agree to disagree. Thank you for your call.
There we go.
And you know, you're in a situation, and Mitch, this kind of call is not something that you're, you know, new to. That kind That kind of behavior. I had a guest on Friday. Believe it or not, it's funny. We do another show on Friday, which I call Free for All Friday, and I met not a young lady either, playing bikini hockey. Okay. They love playing. It's a lot of fun to play. You know, what are people supposed to do? I don't see people saying that men who are playing football should have to put on jeans. You know, they're pretty like football players are pretty sexually provocative in what they wear.
Absolutely. You know, it really comes down to, you know, what works, what doesn't work. As I said, we are trying to build a for-profit business. Hopefully it'll get there soon. But, you know, the bottom line is that's what we're trying to do here. And it's progressing nicely for us, well beyond our imagination. And, you know, as long as we have athletes that want to play, fans that want to watch, and for us loving building the sport, you know, we really don't have anybody else to appease in that equation.
No, and you know, I can understand, you know, in her defense and in the defense of women who may think that way, I can understand their frustration because it seems as though, and I say this with total sincerity, it seems as though they're getting an unfair disadvantage. But unfortunately, it's an unfair disadvantage only in their eyes.
Correct.
You know, it is what it is, and that's just all there is to it. I mean, you know, I wish if I was a tennis player, I looked like Anna Kournikova. But you know what?
It's the world we're living in. You know, it's certain sports work with our culture. Certain sports do not. You know, who's to judge? I might not be a rugby fan, you know, but am I going to go over and judge that sport and its athletes? No, it just doesn't work for me. And that's fine. They're not trying to appeal to me, perhaps. You know, it's to each its own and what's working. And look, we've never been standoffish of women's tackle football. Quite the opposite. We've tried to do anything and everything to help it, you know, to bring awareness to it. Even these teams all around the country and around the world that, you know, go out of their way to shun our athletes or speak negatively. And I could have told you within the first four words that Connie spoke that she plays on a tackle football team. You know, and that's a very small segment. That's why we don't get really flustered about not gaining their approval. We think what we're doing is amazing. The athletes involved love it, the fans, the broadcasters. Honestly, that's all we care about.
let's talk about some of the athletes, and then this will be the last time we refer to the way women look, but I need to say this as well. All the women aren't awesome looking in your league, right?
No, you know,
you get, what I'm saying, right? You get what I'm saying, right?
So, it's absolutely marketability. So it's they're not all Giselle Bundchen. You know, it's different shapes and sizes. Contrary to what Connie was saying, she obviously doesn't know our athlete base that well. You know, we have women that are 6'4". We have women that are 5'1". We have women that are Black, Polynesian, white. The one thing is they have personality. They have marketability. They have healthy images. And that's a very small percentage of people that could do all that, you know. And sometimes, you know, so like I said prior, I wasn't trying to be hurtful toward Connie, but there is a bit of bias there from them and a bit of envy and jealousy. And it's from that small community of women's tackle football players that know they can never play in this league for what it is. And, you know, just like I can't play in the NFL, you know, but I'm not going to go out of my way to berate its athletes or the sport just because I can't be a part of it.
Well, that goes without saying. So now you have some interesting athletes, and just as in every sport, you know, going back, and if people think that it's a brand new thing, this sexy thing, I'm gonna say this. One of the most famous athletes in lingerie was Joe Namath.
Absolutely. Broadway Joe.
So, you know, it's not something, you know, it's not something that's new. It's as old as, you know, the wheel. There are things that sell, there are things that don't sell. You know, let's talk about the athletes. Tell us some about these special athletes that you have that are really carrying the torch for the league, and you guys are very proud to have, like in hockey, the Gretzky's, you know, in football, you know, the great players. Who are they?
Yeah, you know, I mean, to Connie's point, what she maybe fails to understand is our athletes are amateur athletes at this point as well. Nobody's doing it for a paycheck. You know, they're having to carry their 9-to-5 jobs, be mothers, and some are literally commuting across state lines, sometimes two states, just to practice and play for that team. So they're making very similar sacrifices that Connie and other tackle football leagues are doing at this point, because it is such a sport in its infancy. You know, as far as who they are, as I said earlier, you know, they come from all walks of life. And that's why maybe I get a little more defensive when they're attacked, because I know who these people are and how much they love this sport and want to be taken seriously. You know, would they like to, you know, have gotten away from the lingerie football league aspect earlier? Probably. But, you know, but they also wouldn't have had the opportunity to travel to these exotic cities and play all-star games in Sydney, Australia in front of 22,000 fans, or play down in Mexico City in front of 25,000 fans. When will Connie get that opportunity? You know, she won't, because the business wasn't built for commercial viability. And that's what we had to do in the forefront, to your point that you were trying to exhaustively make to Connie. That has to come first. You have to build the audience, and then you can kind of mold that audience and mold the sport and see what the fan base will accept or won't accept. You know, but these women have been in the forefront of building the sport. Most have been with us since the inception of 2009. They keep coming back every year. Some of them will go and have, you know, maternity leave, have a child, and then come back and play the following season. They're committed to it. You know, do we get bad apples every now and then? Absolutely, as any sport does. But for the most part, these are incredible athletes. Like I said, they sacrifice financially. They sacrifice time with their families to play the sport. And we think we've set up a pretty impressive platform for them to make lifelong memories, and that's what they've done. So I couldn't be more prouder of them and where we are as a sport right now.
Well, we have, you know, and on this program I discuss ad nauseum the fact that CFL players are such great players, and I maintain the biggest reason is they're not paid as much as other athletes in other sports, including
sure.
football in the U.S. So, you know, there's a humbleness that develops because you're so grateful that you're actually playing the game you love playing. And I venture to guess that these women, here's the question, the obvious question, do they love the lingerie or playing the game more?
You know, I think it's a bit of both. You'd have to ask them, but the ones I've talked to and seen interviewed, They love the fact that they can be aggressive and you know, play a
the
very
game.
Men-oriented sport, but also keep their femininity and be marketable and be sexy. You know, there's nothing to say besides Connie, of course, that says you can't have both. You know, yeah, you can be all the things above that you see traditional men's sports, but also keep your femininity. And that's what our athletes have done. And, you know, it's a unique breed. Like I said, I tell most people, I think it's the top 5% of the population that are these female athletes that can pull off both sides. And we're very proud of them.
Well, you know, not every athlete is, you know, unattractive, and not every athlete is. So, you know,
sure.
It's a potpourri, if you will. Now, the league right now, it will be expanding. We talked about the fact that you talked about this game. Now they've got a contract for a game, which is a rarity in women's sport. Tell us how that came about.
Yes, I mean, obviously the first step in building any kind of sport is getting on television. You know, we've been fortunate, like I said, in the U.S. the first year we secured a national television deal. You know, in Canada, last year was our first year, and RDS stepped in and really believed in the product and broadcast it nationally. You know, they want to continue that broadcast cycle, and now we're talking to, as I said at the beginning of the call, two major sports broadcasters that love the fact, by the way, obviously, that we've rebranded it and put the focus on the sport and the athlete. And, you know, we feel pretty strongly that it'll be on an English-speaking network up in Canada. And we realize that is going to be the first domino that falls to create the ultimate sport up there that we visioned back in 2012.
It did get a little, a fair bit of publicity up here when it first came up. I wondered where it went, and now I know where it's gone. It's basically gone to come back again, and it isn't a very long season. How soon do you see the possibility that the season may expand beyond the four games that we're talking about this upcoming season? And also two questions, and the names of the teams or the cities that have teams in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we definitely are looking to expand to the minimum of 3-3, so 3 home, 3 away. We're going to do that in the States as early as 2014. In Canada, obviously it is such a new sport. As you said, very few people know about it at this point. You know, we want to have our second season there, a little more television coverage. And then the third season, very strongly look at expanding more games. You know, the arenas we're in, they want more games. The athletes want to play in more games. The broadcasters want to broadcast more games. So everybody wants it, but it's a matter of making sure we're not spread too thin. And also keeping in mind these athletes injure very easily. There's no way they could sustain a, you know, potentially 10, 12-game season. You know, the injuries we get through a 4-game season are significant. We can only imagine if we go to that extent. But that being said, you know, when they're able to do this full-time and train year-round with their bodies, we can have that luxury. But once again, it is so early right now. It's just that our bar is so high, everybody wants us to be the NFL tomorrow. And will we get there? Yes, I think not only will we get to NFL success level, we'll exceed that when you consider the global perspective. But as of right now, we're taking it step by step. And in Canada, we obviously have launched Calgary. We've made it very public that we want to go into Edmonton, into Winnipeg, and also Montreal. Those are the immediate markets, and then we're also looking at the Ottawas of the world, the Windsors, the Londons. This is going to grow there, without a doubt, and there's going to be a lot of overlap between U.S. and Canada. I mean, we had a sellout crowd for our first ever Pacific Cup, which will come back this year, which is a showdown between the U.S. and Canada. So there's an audience for it. We know, you know, how fanatical the fan base is in Canada around sports, and specifically football, and we want to continue to build the sport there. We're committed to it.
So you've got the U.S., Canada, Australia. A little bit about the Europa League.
Yeah, so Europa is obviously very exciting, as all of them are, but, you know, it's such a territory that we all realized we were kind of hesitant to go into because of the failure of NFL Europa that we're all aware of, or NFL Europe. You know, despite that, we feel because of the success we've had with broadcasters there and the fan reaction that this could work. And that was indicative of our first open tryout in Dublin, Ireland. Since we've held it in Manchester, UK, I'll personally be going over to Germany with Hamburg and Dusseldorf, and then we're going to be wrapping things up in Paris, France. And then now a group out of Barcelona has also approached us about launching a franchise there. So that'll be a standalone league that can boast as many as 12 franchises eventually, if not more. But right now we're going to go and adopt the national league perspective and really build the sport there as well.
So in the U.S., you are seen on?
Well, U.S. right now, we were with MTV Networks. We are making the move to a sports network. So that's what basically we're looking at that as 2014. Keep in mind, we rebranded in January and we launched in March. So that's not a huge window to negotiate a deal with the sports network. So we hope to bring it back to television here in the U.S. with a sports network in 2014.
So is there a schedule in place for Canada when we can look forward to seeing some games approximately?
Absolutely.
The time frame?
Yeah, the schedule was released last week. We will be, we're going to start with a doubleheader. The first night, September 13th, will be in Abbotsford as the LFL Canada Champion BC Angels open festivities. That's going to be a big night for us there in BC. And then the following night, September 14th, will be in Calgary for the Calgary Phillies opening night. So an exciting weekend, and it's less than a month and a half away.
And if people want to keep track of what is going on in the Legends Football League, LFLUS.com or WWLFS?
No, for Canadian fans, they have their own league, obviously their own website. They can go to LFLCanada.com, and we'll be uploading all the teams this year shortly. There's some materials there currently, but it's LFLCanada.com. We welcome them to just come out to a game. You know, we invite Connie to come out to a game, see it for yourself, and then pass judgment on these athletes.
Well, you know, it's the same song and dance I give for the Canadian Football League. Come and check it out, then talk to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Frank, I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, it was my pleasure.
Let us know if we can come on later this year, talk about it perhaps before the Canadian Championship, but it takes people like yourself to take a chance on us, get us on air, and hopefully won't let you down.
No, you didn't let me down. In fact, you raised a little excitement, a little banter that's always interesting. And, hey,
sure.
Listen, you know, the world is, you know, a place full of different things and different likes.
Absolutely.
I like apples sometimes. I like oranges other times. And you know, life is more than just one or the other.
Absolutely.
Well, thank
absolutely.
You.
And that's the big point. So I appreciate it, Frank.
My pleasure, my man.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
You're welcome. You too. So we just had Mitchell Mortaza of the LFL US, and it got a little heated with Connie. Connie from Calgary. I'm going to give Connie a call a little later, and what we're going to do, Connie, to prove the point, they just made me aware of your league and how passionate you are about your league. And you have every right to be as passionate about your league as you are. I'm not about picking between different groups. I believe in seeking and searching through all the available ways of entertaining myself and the people who are listening to this program. Open minds are not difficult to have. And, you know, we might as well have them and give everybody an opportunity to take part. I see my buddy from Minnesota's on the line. How's it going, buddy?
Going good, Frank. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Listen, I'm going to take a short break, and let me ask you something. What do you know about Canadian college football?
CIS?
Yeah.
I know a little bit.
Okay. Let's take a short break because my next guest is going to be talking about the CIS. He's from Crown Countdown, a national television show that is coming out of Western Canada, and we're going to talk about that program and how important it is to succeed. Thanks, and I'm really glad to have you back on again.
All right, thank you.
I'm just a regular Joe with a regular job. I'm your average white, least I'd like snob. I like porno and Proline and books about porn. I got an average house with nice hardwood floors. My wife, my job, my kids and my car. My feet on my table and a Cuban cigar. But sometimes that just ain't enough to keep a man like me interested. No way.
Hello.
Now I gotta wear double.
My name's Kevin Ivan. I've been a...
How's it going, buddy? Oh no. He didn't realize he hung up on me. Let's try it again.
Okay.
We'll try it again. He didn't hear me. See if we can get it going this time. Andrew. Andrew.
Yes, hello.
Andrew.
Yes.
The phones have been giving me a nightmare tonight, let me tell you. Andrew Wadden. We're with Andrew Wadden. He is of Crown Countdown, CIS Football. Well, this year you're going through a little bit of change. I want to also introduce you to Mike from Minnesota. He is one of our football experts here from the United States that loves Canadian football. So let me tell you, Andrew, you're in tough here with this guy.
Yeah, I'll have to sharpen up my skills, I guess, a little bit.
yeah, better. I love this guy. This guy's my rock when it comes to Canadian football. Say hello to our guest, Mike.
How you doing, sir? Not too bad, thank you.
Right.
I was a little confused by the phone number there. New York calling me. I thought this was a Canadian show.
It is generated from Canada, but yes, the network is in the U.S.
All right,
you're
excellent.
Right. It is a Canadian show. That it definitely is. I'm proud to say. I'm proud to say A, I guess. Okay, real quick, you don't have much time. Your game's coming up.
Yeah.
Tell us
I'm
first about
sitting
your
at the
program.
Right now. we're in our third season now. So started off under the name CIS Countdown, and now we've moved into rebranding of sorts. The show is now called Crown Countdown U. So the focus being obviously university sports, university football, but we're also going to encompass a few different things this year, look at some guys down south, where some Canadians are doing in the NCAA, whether it's Division I, Division III. Also going to be doing some new features, just looking back at the history of the CIS, looking back at old Vanier Cups, old players, as opposed to last year where we just kind of were a highlight show that sort of morphed into a national roundtable. We're going to give the audience a little bit more substance, more meat on the bone, if you will, try and get more people up to speed with how the CIS has been going and what the future of the past and the future is.
Let's talk a little bit right off the top. What are going to be the main topics in your mind this year in as far as teams are concerned?
Yeah. I mean, obviously looking at things, Laval is just going to be one of those teams. Are they going to win again? That's really the big question. Can anybody knock them off? That might be the bigger question. Looking at Ontario, a lot of interesting things going on in Ontario. Of course, McMaster with a lot of losses, losing Kyle Quinlan, maybe the best quarterback we've seen in quite some time in the CIS. We look out west, you've got teams like Calgary, Manitoba. I mean, there's a lot of real interesting teams throughout all of the CIS, and I think there's going to be quite a healthy competition this year. Maybe not so much in Quebec in terms of the way it's going to go out in terms of the standings in the regular season, but come playoff time, boy, there's going to be some good games. And I'll tell you what, Ontario is just going to be an amazing race this year because there's about four teams that look like they can take it.
Mike, you got a question for our guest?
I was wondering, is there any new news as far as, like, is the AUS going to get absorbed into either Quebec or Ontario? Did you find anything about that?
We've been hearing rumblings about specific teams possibly moving over, what the deal is. We addressed it last year, I think on a couple of times in our national roundtable. I mean, the AUS, it's difficult because you really have almost a second tier. It's almost like a Division II, if you will. with the AUS conference, maybe with the exception of Acadia, who could probably, you know, basically hang with a lot of the teams in Ontario, Canada West, and in the RSEQ. But it'll be very interesting to see how things go moving forward as far as anything permanently happening, anything teams getting absorbed. As far as I know right now, it's the AUS is standing as it is.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some players. Players to look out for this year. One that I find very interesting is a young kid named Finch from Burlington.
Oh, absolutely. Will Finch, Western's quarterback. I mean, that kid, he could have an absolutely amazing season this year. I mean, the Mustangs, I'm going to say right now, and this is obviously kind of projecting things, looking at who they have coming back, but I'm going to say Western's going to be one of the strongest teams, if not the best team in the OUA this year. And Will Finch is just, I mean, you know, the sky's the limit for him. He's got all the intangibles to be, you know, a dominant quarterback throughout the conference. He's also got a running game with Garrett Sanvito. I've watched Garrett many times when he was growing up as a high schooler out here in Vancouver. He just dominated games. He's doing the same thing in the CIS now. He might be the best running back in the CIS. So Will Finch is going to have weapons. And right now, Shaquille Johnson, who was the rookie of the year last year in the CIS, who transferred over from McGill to Western, if he can play, and there's some people that say there is an outside chance that he might not have to redshirt, there's a bit of red tape going on, but if he can play, watch out for the Mustangs this year, because that'll be a dynamic duo between Finch and Johnson. But I believe he'll have to redshirt this year, but Finch is just going to have another great season. Tossed for over 1,500 yards last year, and really Western had a bit of a down year going 5-3, but I think they will bounce back, and he'll be the leader in that squad.
Are there going to be any teams that are going to make, teams like U of T that might make some advances that they haven't made in years?
I mean, you know, U of T, I wouldn't say so much. The one team that I'm really interested in is Carleton. They're the new kids on the block, but they have the right infrastructure. They have the right funding. They have that winning pedigree with some of their other programs, like their basketball program, which, you know, is one of the most dominant in CIS history. I think that's going to trickle down into the football program as well. They have scooped some incredible recruits for this year. Nate Bahar, who is this receiver out of Ontario, Western had their grips all over him, almost had him locked down, and he ended up slipping and going over to Carleton instead. I think I was looking at something like the top 113 recruits in Canada. There's something like, and I'm just guessing, there's something like 10 to 15 out of that 113 that are headed to Carleton. I know that number is not exact, but I know they do have quite a few. So the program's already starting to get interest from a lot of people, and I really am interested to see how they do. I don't think they're going to have a winning record this year, but I think that program is maybe 2, maybe 3 years away from actually getting up there with the upper echelon of the conference. Teams like U of T, York, still struggling to this day, but it looks like Carleton has got the right infrastructure early. And like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they finish ahead of York and U of T this year.
Mike?
Yep.
Your turn.
Okay. So how do you see, like, what would be your top 10 teams this year?
Oh, okay, well, in no particular order. I guess right off the bat, I'm going to say Laval's going to be number one. So, yeah, maybe I will put them in order. I'll try to at least. I like Laval at number one. I like Western at number two. I like McMaster at number Calgary at number three. I would say McMaster at four. Manitoba at five. Guelph at six. And Saskatchewan, seven. I'm going to say Acadia maybe a 10th. Yeah,
there you go.
Montreal is definitely going to be in the mix as well. I mean, you've got Guelph, Queens. I mean, the thing about the OUA is you've got four teams there that are really just going to battle it out with each other this year, and you could have four teams from that conference in the top 10. There's just going to be that dominant in Ontario this year, I believe.
Now, let's talk about your program, and you also now, we discussed that you're going to show as much interest in the CIS as you will be showing now, in players in the United States that are you know, making noise. Who are some of the players in the United States that will be playing there that we should be aware of?
Well, we've got a few guys that we've got our radar on, but at the moment, a lot of the guys haven't really given where they're going to be just yet. So we have a few guys that are looking at their CIS and their NCAA options. So we're kind of inclined to not want to speak with them at the moment because we don't know exactly where they're going. But I'll tell you what, as far as the content is concerned, though, we will be heavy on Canada, and I will be heavy on the CIS. I think the NCAA interest is going to be quite light because we are, you know, our bread and butter is the CIS, and we want to make sure we're promoting that product as much as possible.
Okay. Now, in CIS football, we've seen now that the Vanier Cup is going to stand alone by itself for the first time in a while. Comment on that for me and how that arrived. The obvious thing would say that they went to Laval and that's what caused it.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Laval's been wanting to have the Vanier Cup for quite some time now. They have the facility for it. They have, you know, the fans that will come out and support it. It is a little disheartening to see the Grey Cup and the Vanier Cup split up. I think the last couple of years have been quite a success. But that being said, the CIS and the CFL, I think the working relationship between the two might possibly need some improvement. That's just my opinion from an outsider's looking in. But, you know, they're going to have a great event in Laval this year. And the fact that you have now have a changeover with the broadcasters, with Sportsnet and their new 360 channel coming in on board, and the Vanier Cup being promoted through there, and obviously with the OUA already having the University Rush program that came from the score now into Sportsnet 360. I think it's going to be good for the product, but I would have liked to see the two stick together. Might have something to do with facilities this year as well. I believe the Grey Cup this year is in Saskatchewan. Am I correct?
That's correct.
I believe it's in Saskatchewan. So
yep,
I think
there's
an issue there. I believe there's an issue there with hotels not having enough hotel rooms because of the fact of all the people that end up coming for the Vanier Cup as well. I mean, these are just things that I've heard as well. There could be other things that are tying the two, are not making the two work together. But it's a bit of a shame, but it did work in Vancouver. Worked very well in Vancouver, and it worked very well last year in Toronto. But I think we're going to have a great show this year at Laval, and it might be good for just maybe the one season. Maybe they come back and do it again in a bigger city setting.
How much time we got before you got to go make your first pitch?
I have time still.
Okay. Well, that's the gag. He's on his way to playing, and we're on the air with him. He's trying to give us as much time as he can. Now, what are some of the stories? Or I'm sorry, Mike, it's your turn. You want to try another one?
Yeah, I guess. So you said Sportsnet and Rogers has a new TV contract?
Yeah.
So how does that work? Do they cover across the board all the conferences, or is it just a few?
Yeah, I mean, they do. If you've ever seen with the score before, obviously they had the University Rush, which is all OUA football. But in terms of, like, the way they run their highlights portion of the show, they do give pretty much every conference a good shake and a good amount of highlights in their highlight packs per night. Now, there's been no talk, as far as I know, about any sort of CIS-based show or, like, highlight show or anything kind of like what we do at Countdown U. I'm not too sure what Sportsnet's plans are in that regard, but I know they're going to be doing OUA football. I know, obviously, that they have the Vanier Cup, and I believe they're going to be doing some basketball as well. Now, I believe that's only going to happen in the championship rounds for the CIS. But I'm, again, not exactly sure where they're going in terms of how much coverage they're going to give across Canada, but I'm sure that you're going to get plenty of OUA and plenty of OUA football on Sportsnet 360 this year.
So does TSN still carry the bowl games like the Mitchell and Hardy Bowl?
No, the Yates Cup is going to be on Rogers Sportsnet. Mitchell Bowl, I believe, is going to be out. I believe Sportsnet has that one as well. I know Shaw has the Canada West Game of the Week out here, and they do everything Canada West on Shaw TV out in Western Canada. But the rest of the bowl games, I'm not 100% sure where they're going. I believe that it might be Sportsnet 360, but as far as I know, TSN and the CIS are not working together anymore.
So what are the matchups? Because I believe last year was McMaster and Calgary in the bowl games, and like people made a big deal about that being sort of like a big matchup. In Laval, I guess, had an easy.
Yeah.
I forgot who they played, but they had like an easy route. So is it switch up this year?
So this crossover is switch up now. Yeah. So
okay.
I mean, and that's just circumstance last year, right? And you know, a lot of people said, oh well, this is the actual Vanier Cup, and it wasn't even a game really between Calgary and McMaster, and
right.
It was proven that Laval was the dominant team. So, you know, in hindsight, looking back at it, was, you know, people said, well, you know, maybe this is the championship game, but in actuality, it wasn't, and Laval, you know, deserved to be where they ended up being.
So is there any scenario where Laval, for one of the bowl games, would have to head out west to, say, either Calgary or Saskatchewan, if that was a possibility?
That could be a possibility. Again, though, with the winning records, right? So, I'd be shocked if Laval had a lesser record than any team from out west going into those bowl games.
So then, who in Quebec can actually challenge Laval? Like, I've heard Montreal's coming up.
Yeah.
Like, is there anyone in particular that you're looking at?
Yeah, Montreal would be your closest, but I mean they're bringing in a new quarterback this year. Nadeau Pius is gone, and they've got Gabriel Cousineau in there. So, I mean, new quarterback's going to obviously take some adjustments to get used to. Rotran Seni, one of the best running backs in all of the CIS. I mean, he's going to be there as well. But, again, the thing is with Laval is that, I mean, they just retool, right? I mean, they've guys drop out, guys drop in. I mean, it's just the way that program has been for the last little while now. And it's a testament to the way they run the program. And really, I do not see any team really coming close to them in the conference. You've got a few pretenders in there. I mean, McGill got a big grant. I think it was a $1.5 million donation into their program. So you know McGill is going to start to change things around, hopefully change the culture there, try to get you know, some private funding and get the facilities up to where they should be with the way Laval runs the program in Montreal as well. Sherbrooke has one of the best quarterbacks in Jeremy Doyon-Rock, but I mean, they'll go as far as he can take them, and I don't think they have the depth to match up with a team like Laval on both sides of the ball.
So do you see any program in the next 5 years elevating to the status that Laval is at?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, McGill, I mean, that donation alone is going to be just massive for the program. And that's a program that has had success in the past as well and is looking to get themselves back up into the elite teams. Like I mentioned earlier, Carleton, I mean, I'm really, really excited to see what's going to happen with Carleton because I think they're the right school to come into the OUA. I think they have the right mindset, they have the right funding, and they have that winning approach. And you know, it's one of those schools that it's going to entice the student-athlete as well as the athlete because that is a great school for academics. And then, of course, with the way they run their programs with basketball and football, I think that Carleton could be one of those teams in the next 5 years as well. But, I mean, you always have the mainstays as well. I mean, you've got Calgary is always going to be there. They always seem to be strong. They just retool. Western, again, one of those schools. I mean, Western reminds me of, like, even though they, you know, I guess they could have similar success, but they always remind me of, like, a Notre Dame when I think of CIS football and kind of compare them to how they are down south.
Andrew, a lot of the sports that are being played here in North America, the Big Four, if you will, basketball, Canadians rising to the top, baseball, Canadians rising to the top. We don't have to talk about hockey. Now, football, do we see any players that like a Finch that, you know, he's good enough that he could end up going to the U.S.? Do we see any players that could be internationally, you know, very good and very highly ranked and great talents?
I do, but, I mean, a lot of the time with Canadian players, I mean, we grow them big up here, you know, and it just seems like we get the guys that do go down south end up being, you know, linemen, linebackers, you know, very, very rarely. I mean, I'm just trying to think of a Canadian running back, or there's definitely not a Canadian quarterback that's breaking through anytime soon into the NFL, let alone the CFL. And I mean, that's a debate within itself is why can we not get, you know, the elite positions as Canadian players in our own league, in our own backyard. So,
well, answer the question. Why?
Well,
now that you've asked yourself the question.
Well, you know, what's going on with Kyle Quinlan? You know, I mean, last year we had this debate in our national roundtable last year. You know, a lot of us thought, yeah, Kyle Quinlan might be the guy that ends up being, you know, the Canadian quarterback in the CFL. And, you know, he's gone from Montreal right now. I mean, there's who knows what the actual story is about it, but he left training camp, and it doesn't look like he's coming back. He's going to coach with them this year. So it's discouraging in that regard, but as far as the original question is concerned, yeah, you've got some big kids that are going down south that are cracking NFL rosters. And it, like I said, it tends to be those big guys, those you know, 6'8", 300-pound linemen that we love to produce in Saskatchewan and surrounding areas like that. But as far as, like, you know, somebody breaking in as an upper echelon NFL quarterback, I mean, I don't see that anytime soon in the future.
In other words, a star position.
Yeah, exactly.
Mike?
I mean, receivers, wide receivers, running backs, I mean, very rare. You see them in the CFL, definitely. But in NFL, it's just a little bit different. Yep, exactly. I mean,
Sinopoli.
Look at Sinopoli. I mean, he's, you know, he... Forever, we're like, oh, well, Sinopoli is going to be that quarterback. He's going to be the guy that's going to, you know, crack in the CFL. I mean, he's now having to make his way as a receiver. Again, going back to Quinlan, I mean, it kind of blows me away that Quinlan is where he is. I mean, but mind you, Montreal has, you know, Calvillo, and he's been there forever, and they have a wealth of guys that are in their program. So hopefully we'll see it one day, and I'd love to see, you know, someone like we've seen in basketball recently with, you know, the NBA's first overall pick being a Canadian, and looking like next year it's probably going to be the same thing again.
Exactly.
With that Andrew Wiggins kid. So, yeah, could it happen? Absolutely. Is it in the future right now? Is there anyone that we can pinpoint? I don't think so.
What are some of the issues, not to talk negatively about the CIS, but what are some of the battles that the CIS is going to have this year or things that they need to overcome, you know, whether it be political or mechanical?
For like, what are the things I need to overcome with, like, for, like, getting players or to be a better league,
to be a better league, you know, what steps do they have to take? What changes do they have to make, do you think?
I think it comes down to funding. I think private funding is proving that that's the best way to run football programs. Every school that has it are successful at the moment. I mean, maybe with outside of McGill, who's just starting to kind of get that private funding kicked back in as well. But, you know, I think what needs to be done is, but it's one of those things. If you're an athlete and you have, you know, you want to go to where the best competition is, and, you know, as far as the CIS is concerned, they can offer what a Division I school, maybe even a Division II, and in some cases a Division III school can offer down in the United States. The level of play is that much higher down there, and that's why these kids that think they have a shot are going there. Now, I have no issue with that whatsoever. I think as a player, you should go to where you think you're going to get the best competition. But the problem I'm seeing, and we're seeing with a lot of guys, is they're going down there and they're not getting in. They think they can play that level. They're not getting in. They're wasting one, maybe 2 years of their eligibility. They come back up here, and then they finally crack into the CIS. I want to see some more of those players who maybe are, I wouldn't say fringe Division I players, but those guys that maybe, you know, maybe down south isn't the best thing for you, even you think it is. That's when I want the CIS to be in those kids' heads going, no, I've got a better opportunity. I'm going to get just as much as I can out of a Canadian school as I can in an American school. I mean, if you're a talent that is, you know, far, too far from being with the CIS, then, yeah, you have to go down and play where you think you got to play. But I've seen too many stories where guys go down and they end up basically sitting and redshirting and basically coming back to the CIS, losing years of eligibility already.
So the frustration of being in the right place at the right time is one that you're trying to avoid if you're a player right now. The CIS is a great option for playing, and so you feel that it's better to take that one step backwards so that you can take all those steps forward, I guess.
Or be realistic about things as well, right? I mean, I think a lot of kids they have one goal in mind. And, you know, it's great to reach for the stars. You want to, you know, try to make the NFL and, you know, be a millionaire if that's what it's about for you. But, you know, you got to have the right people in your ear, and you have the right people telling you exactly what you are. I mean, to scoff at a CIS career would be lunatic for a lot of kids, especially with how hard it is to make it down south. I think a lot of these kids at times forget the education side of things and just kind of look at the sport. But the CIS, majority of these schools, especially the top schools in the football, are going to offer you not only a great athletic career, but also a great chance of having a career outside of your years playing sports at university.
Very impressed with Kyle Norris, who was drafted by Edmonton and really has played well. He was a guest on my show before he was drafted. I got to, you know, research him a little bit. A real great player. How many players like him, what other players like him that you feel have really, you know, from the draft table to, you know, the practice roster at the very least?
Oh, well, I mean, and if you just look around, I mean, like, you know, there's guys like Michael DeCroce from McMaster, who injured his ankle, made the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, a, you know, dynamic receiver, but then injured his ankle. It looks like if his ankle is going to heal up, it looks like he's going to come back. So, I mean, a guy like DeCroce probably would have made a bit of an impact in the CFL this year, especially if he's able to get a chance. If you look at other guys like Matt Sewell, who plays for McMaster as well, I mean, big offensive lineman, went to a Tennessee Titans minicamp and gained a ton of experience from that. I mean, you definitely can look out for someone like Sewell, whether he goes down south or ends up playing in the CFL as well. And then you just got other guys that are going to be coming up, too. I mean, Rotrant Sene is a dynamic running back from Montreal who I believe should have a very good CFL career. Steven Lamvala, who is with the Montreal Alouettes now, he will be a very good running back in the CFL in the years to come. I mean, and even, you know, you could see guys like Brett Blasco, who was the Rookie of the Year last year for the Calgary Dinos, Rookie of the Year in the Canada West. I would not be surprised if you see that guy catching balls in the CFL in the next 5 years. So, there, you know, there's definitely a lot of guys, a lot of Canadians, and you know, playing at those dynamic positions, whether it be wide receiver, quarterback, or running back, but unfortunately not quarterback.
How about, and finally, I know it must be close to time for you to have to leave.
Yeah.
Coaches-wise, I'm not really well-versed in the CIS, but one thing I've noticed is even in the short time that I've been following it, coaching has improved dramatically, hasn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. And, I mean, you've got, again, it comes down to, you know, if your program's getting the right funding, then the coaching's going to get better. You're going to be able to entice other guys to come in, or, you know, maybe more skilled coaches to come in and work in Canada. I mean, maybe some of these guys are finding more work down south because of the fact that, you know, you can earn yourself a legitimate living doing it. But, I mean, if you have the funding like you have in, say, Laval, Western Guelph, you know, you're going to be able to attract those kind of coaches. So, yeah, definitely the coaching has gone up. And you're also seeing a lot of guys that, you know, have played the game as well that are going back into it. I mean, look at Kyle Quinlan right now. I mean, technically the kid should be playing pro somewhere, and he's going to roam the sidelines at McMaster 1 year removed from being a player and being the Heck Creighton Award winner. So, you know, that speaks volumes in itself. I mean, you know, Marshall Ferguson, the new, you know, his takeover, understudy, if you will, for Kyle Quinlan the last couple of years, but he's going to be now running that offense at Mac, and you're going to have a guy like Quinlan helping him out as well. So, I mean, you know, you're seeing things like not only better coaches get hired in there, but also guys kind of giving back too.
That's awesome. It's great to see. And I really look forward to how do we find your program, Crown Countdown, so that we can follow the progress of your show?
Yeah, so you can check every episode on the CIS football main page. Once a week we are put up, I believe it goes up on Wednesday evening, starting in late August. If you are in Western Canada, you can watch it on Shaw TV. And then also, I think in Eastern Canada, you will be able to, we're still in negotiations with Cogeco, which is who we broadcasted through last year, which is, I believe, is sprinkled throughout Southern Ontario. I believe it's the Hamilton area.
Yep.
Oakville. Overly familiar. Yeah. So
no, it's all I am. Oakville.
Yeah. So Cogeco out east. But basically, if you know, if you ever miss an episode, you can always just go to the CIS main page. They have the new episode up every week, and then they have the archived ones as well.
And it has been a total pleasure, Andrew. It's like a windstorm of CIS talking to you.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you having me on.
You're welcome, Mike.
Mike's
going to give you a chance. He's around. Okay. Well, when we're going to take a short break, and of course, we're just with Andrew Wadden. He is from Crown Countdown out west, BC. He just told you how you can hook up with him, check out his stuff. It's a great program. I recommend it to you if you're a CIS fan. And, you know, there's not a lot of places we can get this kind of information, and Andrew Wadden and company do provide it for us. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Have a great night.
You too. All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, it'll be Michael and me. The 49th Vanier Cup has a sponsor. It's TELUS. The game will be played in 2013 in Quebec City. The CIS Vanier Cup, the championship of all the universities in Canada. Here are some sound bites at the press conference. Gilles Lépine, co-chair of the 2013 TELUS Vanier Cup.
Very confident. The fact that we receive a lot, we're hosting a lot of championships. I'm just thinking about the soccer men that we host this year, volleyball men that we host again. We will have a rugby woman just 3 weeks before the Vanier Cup. So we're used to do that. We're happy because our organizing committee is very well organized, with big experience. So with that, we're confident the infrastructure too that help us to be there.
Christian Côté, co-chair of the 2013 TELUS Vanier Cup.
Very happy as well to work with Jill and all the people of the organizing committee. It's a challenge for us, but it's a great challenge. We're kind of used to that. We get great crowds each and every week. So it's going to be a big event.
Jean-François Saint-Germain, VP Quebec Region and Public Markets, TELUS.
Well, it was a natural for us. We're entering the second year of a 20-year partnership with Université Laval. We have our name on the stadium. So for us to be the main sponsor of this not only a natural, but we have the support of all the members, the TELUS members of Quebec City, which the majority are graduates.
So they've got a sponsor. You heard on the program earlier that the Vanier Cup will be playing alone by itself out there in Laval, while the Grey Cup will be played in Saskatchewan. And Andrew mentioned that some of the reasons might have been there just isn't enough places for people to stay to have both those events take place in the same city, that being the Vanier Cup and the Grey Cup. Mike, what an interesting week in the CFL, huh?
Yes, sir. I got several things I was hoping to talk to you about. I know we only got 20 minutes, so...
Yeah, we got 22 minutes, about 21, so that I get a chance to say goodbye to all the folks, and let's get it rolling, buddy.
All right, so first thing I got to ask you, the big one for the Argos is Brandon Isaac getting cut and then getting signed by the Tiger Cats. Any inside info on that?
No, not a bit of inside info, but what I will say is that you can be sure about one thing. The player that's coming in is going to be cheaper than Brandon Isaac.
Yeah, I think. Do you know who's starting? I heard it might be Shane Horton or the Jackson kid, number 10. Is there any?
There were also some other choices. There really isn't, from what I understand, there isn't anyone in particular that was the reason why Brandon Isaac was let go. Which says to me, it's more than just the fact that he didn't fit in, or. You know what I mean? There's more to than just because they don't have somebody that they can even say is going to step in. When Boyd was let go last year, they knew Kackert was their guy.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess that must mean there must be some internal stuff going on, you know?
Well,
he was a really big piece of the team last year. He was great in the playoffs and in the Grey Cup. I thought he was a perfect, he was Chris Jones's guy from Calgary, and I thought, so it must be, I don't understand why they would just let him go for no reason.
Well, maybe this is another one of those deals Ricky Ray, where, You know, the owner of the Argonauts is a Hamilton fan and just wants to help Hamilton out. Because that when you consider the reasons that you can figure out, that reason doesn't sound as crazy as it might. You know what I mean? Considering the situation, I mean, there's no, what other explanation is there? You know, that's better than that. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense at all. It has to be something political, in my mind.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to talk about was, I know you probably saw this, but I think John Granger put up that link towards that that article in the Toronto Sun that the mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, had about the stadium. And, like, I heard everything he had to say. I read the article. The thing that bothered me really badly was when I scrolled down to the comment section, and I was blown away by, like, the anti-CFL just – it was just, like, a bunch of Toronto people just bashing the CFL, calling it irrelevant, comparing it to the, you know – Toronto Rock and the whole lacrosse thing and how relevant it is. And I was just like, I mean, obviously you're from Toronto, so you know it more, but, like, is it really that bad? Do people in Toronto really, you know, stick their noses up at the CFL and just consider it, like, a joke? Because that was amazing. Like, I've never, it was like there were about 40 comments, and every single one, with the exception of one guy, was just bashing the CFL.
Well, the article you're talking about was written by Zach Paikin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I spoke to him before the show. I was going to try and get him to come on, but he had an engagement at a movie, so he couldn't come on. He was going to come on with us here, Mike. And I was going to talk to him about that article and what he thought and where that came from. We'll get Zach in. Zach might be coming in on Friday. He'll be on the show on Friday. I think we'll get him on Friday. The thing of it is that here in Toronto, we sometimes, because it's such a big city, we sometimes are misinterpreted by many, you know. And the biggest misinterpretation is this, is that there are a lot of different viewpoints in Toronto, many of which don't create the atmosphere that the CFL is number one, obviously. That goes without saying. But
right.
I think the problem is that the CFL, you know, I'm a CFL fan. It's not on the ground dying. You know what I mean? Like, it's not down on the ground and these people are stepping on it. All they're doing is kicking the CFL in the shins. That's all they're doing. These are people who are just, you know, negative people who are haters of the CFL. Because for some stupid reason, some of them think that if the CFL disappeared tomorrow, the NFL would appear. I totally disagree with the way they're talking. I don't know the reason, but maybe this other guy that you referred to, John Granger, might be able to tell us what he thinks.
Well, I'll give you answers on both of those regarding Isaac and regarding the article. And the one that Mike is talking about is not the Zach article. It's the article that was published yesterday, and it had Rob Ford talking about the trip that he took out west, and all these Torontonians wrote negative comments, which I agree, Mike, and they are, first of all, naive and not really Canadian traditionally based Torontonians who write those comments, because they just have no idea of the history and the depth of the importance and the money value that the CFL in Toronto brings in. Number two, actually, but let me give you the number one. Regarding Isaac, if you guys haven't seen, last year, yes, beautiful, followed up through his plays and everything. The first three games of the season, got burned on 2-3 major long bombs, didn't follow through for the on the tackles. And the one thing that I've noticed that the coaches do not stand, absolutely zero tolerance on this, is if you don't follow through with a tackle, especially when you've been burnt on a long play. You don't push the guy into the end zone. You got to follow through and dive for him. And he's done that in a couple plays where, you know, it just looked like he gave up. And I'm not going to say that's Isaac in a nutshell, but that's what I saw. I was frustrated. It happened one game on the Saskatchewan game right in front of us. So, you know, last year there was a player who passed away after he got cut. It had nothing to do with the Argos. It was a Florida native kid. I can't remember his name. And he got cut because of that same reason. Didn't tackle when he got burnt at the end of the play. And you're just not going to get a job if you don't follow through on a tackle. So that's regarding Isaac. Regarding the article, again, Frank, he's not talking about Zach's article today.
He's talking about the stadium. Zach wrote an article too. Yeah, okay, go on.
Yeah. So anyway, that's
you're talking
about
Ford with the stadium.
Yeah, I just want to fill you guys in on both those, just to kind of correct the factual part of it over here, and carry on. Sorry, I was just listening. I thought, no, I got to give you the answers to it. So there you go, Mike.
I appreciate that. Rob Ford was saying he, like, named several different sites, and he talked about trying to get 35,000-seat stadium. So is there any – does he have any political clout? Because he seems to be, like, a quote-unquote one of those controversial guys. So does he have any political pull at all in the city to try to get something like that going? Or?
Well, what he's doing is – and John will understand this term. He's scratching an itch.
Okay.
You know? Mm-hmm. And Toronto deserves what everybody else seems to have. Of all the – like, we're talking, you know, how can Toronto not have the economic wherewithal to build a stadium like Winnipeg, like a city in Winnipeg? And all these renovations that have been done, Montreal, you know, with renovations. BC renovated their stadium.
I got my own version on that. It's simple. Ford, first of all, is a huge – football CFL fan. He's in a political position where he has a voice and he's passionate about supporting the CFL. Whatever he can do and to get the ball rolling is greatly appreciated. We have a lot of people right now who are, you know, hating his image and basically anything that will come out of his mouth regarding public money for football that is not being supported by fans is not coming across positive. And that, you know, it's all about timing. If it wasn't this crack story, which was a bunch of bogus stuff, it was a witch hunt against him and the political realm that he's involved with here. He got a lot of unions unhappy. He terminated a waste contract that covered 50% of the west side of the city that now we are getting 10 times better service and we no longer will have to worry about a strike. Well, he got those people pissed off, and those people have political tentacles that reach out, and he's getting burnt by them, and he's getting stung. So, unfortunately, he is a great voice. At the same time, you're going to have a lot of negative backlash because of the bad press that he's been getting recently in the last few months. So, in a nutshell, I really appreciate what Mr. Ford is doing. Anything out there to put the word out is a positive thing. So, regardless of the negative, naive comments that Torontonians are writing about, it has to be talked about. It can't go away. We're talking about historical franchise here that does bring money and tax dollars into the city, and factually you can throw out the Grey Cup of what it did recently and how many millions of dollars that it put into the economics of Ontario and particularly the metropolitan Toronto area. So there you go.
And I think Zach in his article quoted that 1 in 2 Metro Toronto people watched the game last year.
Exactly.
1 in 2.
Good point, Frank. Good point. Yeah. Good point. So this thing about people don't really want it. No, it's been tarnished and bad mouthed and demoted to, you know, C-class level sport as far as the talk about it. That, like I said to you, Mike, before, the press here in Toronto over the last decade and two decades were on this jolly trip high that if they motivate everybody in Toronto to talk about NFL having a come here, a pipe dream, that they're going to get their press passes and they're going to get another access to a bigger kind of a sport, okay? And that, so they jumped on it. And, of course, a lot of politicians here gave it kind of some hope, like Paul Godfrey did his best to put the word out there. And now with the Bills, with Rodgers, you know, it's all this political realm going on here. What can I say? I love Ford for what he's doing right now. Maybe not all his political views, but I love the fact that he's talking about it.
You know,
it, right?
You know, John, I don't. I think you're wrong a little bit about him being a failure, and it's not a failure, but people not being able to do stuff because of his rep. No, Mayor Ford. He pushed through the idea that subways should be the way to go, and that took a lot of bravery on his part. You know, ultimately, subways are the best way to go.
Yeah, but he's going to win. He can get that, Frank, because people need the subways. People are saying
exactly.
They don't need the CFL. Okay,
no, but I'm just saying, John. No, but I'm just saying, John. They will agree with him if he's right. That's all I'm saying. They will agree with him if he's right. You know, it's. I think you know. At the end of the day, politicians and the people who work for us have a responsibility to us. You know what I mean? And they eventually have to, you know, there is a level of accountability regardless. To answer your question, Mike, yeah, the mayor has some pull, and yes, he's trying to use it. Will it work? Like John says, God only knows. We don't know if it'll work, but every little bit helps. Next one you wanted to talk about, Mike?
No, I know. I remember on Monday, you guys, I got to listen to the show. You guys covered most of the action on the weekend, but how about the Riders, man? They look like they're just going to steamroll to the Grey Cup. I mean, who's going to stop them? I mean, they look fantastic.
Hey, Mike, what are they right now? How do they stand record-wise?
They're 4-0.
And what were they last year after four games?
Oh, no. Everyone says that, but you can't do that because I watched, you know, the team last year, they were not – that start last year wasn't as great. I mean, they barely beat the Lions.
Yeah. No, you know.
You're
right. No, no, Mike.
I'm
teasing you, Mike. John and I both agree that, and I'm not going to speak for John. I'll speak for myself. I agree with you 100%. This Saskatchewan team is awesome at this point. They're the reason why, believe it or not, I truly believe this. They're the reason why the Argos know they got to start right now. They got to start building a team because if they really want to win a championship, it looks like the road's going to go through Saskatchewan twice. Once the team and then the city. You know what I mean?
Right. Like I was calling it before the season started. I was saying there was going to be Argos against the Riders in the Grey Cup, and that looks like a guaranteed lock. I mean, you look at the East. What the heck is going on? Everybody else is 1-3. Like the Argos are going to just slip and fall into the number one seed and just not even have to try. I mean,
A dangerous situation. It's like in hockey, they say, the dreaded 2-0 lead, or when it comes to the Leafs, the 4-1 lead. You know, it's not guaranteed. You could have a game or a season well in hand, and it can disappear on you in a hurry.
But I don't know, Frank. Look at Winnipeg and Hamilton. I mean, even if Toronto were to struggle, they're guaranteed a top two seed. I mean, do you see them falling?
All I can say to all that, Mike, is that week five is when it really initially starts. It's when the teams that do have everything together clicking at the beginning are going to have to worry because the teams who haven't been doing it, and mind you, if there are no injuries, if everybody's full strength and they're just trying to gel. Because in the CFL with a two-game preseason. Yeah, that's right, Frank. With a two-game preseason and they meet with, you know, 2 weeks prior to the first preseason game or whatever. It's a short training camp and to gel and to get the chemistry and the plays and the playbook together. So Saskatchewan, these guys are hungry, okay? They're just clicking on all cylinders. Again, you know, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's one thing to say, yeah, it's not the same season. Then again, we're playing a different combination of teams that they started off with compared to last year, where they started off with a weak East that have new coaches, changeover and turnover in staff like everybody else does. I'm going to give it a little bit of more time, but you're absolutely right. Riders.
Are you questioning the Riders? I mean, they're like the best team by a long shot. Like,
by
no
long
one's even close.
No doubt. But you know what, Mike? I thought they were by a long shot last year. I really thought.
Really? Last year they
weren't
even that deep. Like, look at their defense.
No,
their defense
deep, no matter.
Year, starting...
3-0. They won those games clean. I mean, they won.
No, they barely won. Come on. I remember they won clean.
Oh, I don't know. I remember them winning it clean, and I remember the fact that Riders were already high skies. They're saying they're coming to Toronto. They're booking extra tickets and stuff.
But that year they were still rebuilding. Like, that was Corey Chamberlain's first year.
True.
And that year they had about 17 new starters from the previous season. This year, the reason it's not just their starters. Their depth is like there's no one close to them. No one else has.
No.
They have
backups
that are good enough to start on every other team. That's insane.
You're right. No, they're fine, too. I don't see him losing the West. There's no doubt about that. Again,
Mike, I don't know how long you've been listening to the show, but I was joking all year since January. I've been joking about the fact there's got to be something weird going on with the salary cap because I can't believe that Saskatchewan isn't over the salary cap.
Exactly.
John, am I not telling the truth? Haven't I said that all
100%.
Since January?
100%.
You know?
Look at all the big name guys. They got Foley, Chick, G. Roy Simon, Durant's getting paid almost $300,000. You got Dressler. Then you got all these other good talented players. I mean,
how are they
just went over
the cap
on purpose? Like,
but how are
what is
they
the penalty?
Like, they're not paying a penalty. They announced before the season started. John, remember they announced before the season? I think I commented on it on the show as well. They said Cohan put out a note, or somebody put out a note, said, "Well, all the teams are under the salary cap. Congratulations, nobody's getting fined this year." And
what?
I almost fell off my chair. What? Really?
Like, do the Argos even have five players making more than $100,000? Like, honestly, you can't even name
five. Yeah.
Like, it's Ricky Ray, Chad Owens, Chad Kackert, and then what? Who? Like, who else is really getting paid on that team? Nobody. You look at the Riders;
they have
at least 8 or 9 guys that are legitimately getting at least $150,000. That's crazy. How is that possible?
Yeah, that's I can't even throw an answer into that.
You know what, John?
Let me help
y'all throw an answer. It's another Ricky Ray mystery.
Well, you know, the accountants could be wrong at the beginning of the season, and then when it's all clarified and audited at the end of the season when the books have to be put in, then it turns up, oh, you know what, we were over the cap, slap on the hand, here's the fine, but we'll take the fine. We'll take it all day long. You know, what's the
I mean,
day?
Wouldn't you if you could? I mean, if you're the Riders, and look how much money they have. I mean, they could. I mean,
exactly.
Whatever the penalty is, I'd pay it if it can get you a Grey Cup.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
but
remember.
On the side note,
remember this
ahead.
Though, guys. Also, with the cap, what affects the cap are injuries. Now, G.
Roy
Simon wasn't playing. He was injured before the season started. Now, the question I have is, are they over the cap now? Because G. Roy Simon's not a penny ante athlete.
Yeah, but he's getting $180,000. So if he's
there
getting
you go.
$180,000, John Chick is getting $200,000. Ricky Foley's getting, I think, $180,000. You know, I mean, I don't
well,
understand
refresh my
how
memory.
That's possible.
Regarding the Simon thing, that was a trade, was it not?
Yeah, it was a trade, and then they did, like, they traded him, and then he re-signed, he restructured his contract because he was getting about
$250,000
from the line.
Yeah, from what I understand, the BC is partially paying for that, some of that contract with the trade. That's what I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I thought I heard
something
like that.
That
would be
the
only way it would work. And then it sounds again like the owner of the Argos, BC Lions, is being generous, you know. I don't know.
Well,
it
was because they wanted to open up some room on BC. They knew that they couldn't get Simon, and, you know, with the aging factor and stuff, they couldn't sign him for the extension that he wanted with a lot more money that I guess he wanted because of his PR that he does there and all that stuff. I think they wanted to get Luli signed solid and then get a whole bunch of linebackers that they wanted. I remember there was a whole bunch of re-signings in BC, which had to free up money to get their front linemen. And
they're
the
paying
defensive
Travis Lule $450,000. That's crazy.
Is that right?
Can you believe that?
Whoa.
They're paying him more
than
Ricky. Yeah. He's the highest paid quarterback in the league right now. And I'm like, there's not been – the guy is so overrated, it's not even funny. Like, the fact that he's getting paid more than Anthony Cavillo to me is just absolutely insane. I don't even know how that even – but apparently that's what the Lions did. That's one of the reasons why they let G. Roy Simon go. Because
Less than a minute to go.
Well, you guys finish it off. Thank you very much, and thanks for letting me jump in and fill you in on the story stuff and whatever. Good show. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Frank. Take care.
You're welcome.
Right.
John Granger, no stranger to the Argo Lifers. Yes, thank you, John. Section 134, proud beater of the drum. Okay, I'll give you another 25 seconds. We can talk about this week real quick, or whatever. Your choice. You got 20 seconds, buddy.
Okay, I guess Thursday, I'm guessing you're with me on this, Montreal beats Edmonton. Friday night, Calgary over Winnipeg. Saturday, I think that's Hamilton and Saskatchewan Saturday, am I right?
Right.
Okay, I guess.
And then Tuesday, the Argos.
Who are you picking in that one?
Oh, my God. I'm picking the Argos.
Okay. You're going to be at the game?
Absolutely. Be
what
sure to ask.
Crowd? Are you expecting a big crowd, or are we going to see another, like, 18,000?
You know, it's a Tuesday game. It's going to be another 18,000. Got to go. Listen, thank you. Mike from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Didn't get a chance to put your blog on. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. See you again next week.